This is The Think Tank, talking about the major economic, political, and social issues of the week. On the Voice of Arizona, News Talk 92.3 KTAR, here's Dr. Mike O'Neill and Mike Russell.
Here we are. We talked last week about government waste, government spending, and Mike Russell here made a comment, said, what about healthcare, which was a good comment. Healthcare is, after all, 16 or 17% of our entire economy. That's a combination of what you pay in premiums, what's paid for healthcare, what the government pays. Put it all together, it is 1/6 of the economy. Our guest, Francine Hardaway, has blogged incessantly on the subject. She has a website we will repeat again. It's ushealthcrisis.com. That's ushealthcrisis.com. Really good stuff. So you have a lot of thought. We pay 16% of our entire economy for health care, and we don't manage to cover everybody. The next country is about half of what we are, and they cover everybody. So how come our health care is so expensive?
No, it's worse than that. It's not only do we not cover everybody, but when we do cover people, we give people the wrong thing. We have a fee-for-service, the more you do, the more you get paid economy. And so what happens is the doctors are incentivized to treat, treat, treat. I'm going to give you a very good example because I'm guessing that KTAR listeners are 50. Most of them. And so I'm going to tell you that at age 50, they tell you to start having colonoscopies. So I was a good girl. I had a colonoscopy and it came out normal. So now they would like me to have a colonoscopy every 10 years, whether I need it or not.
And I think most of us have been told that that is good sound medicine.
Yes, but on the other hand, if you have no family history, if you have taken other tests, and there are other less invasive tests along the way, and they've all been normal, and if, like me, because of something else, you have just had a CAT scan of your abdomen within the last 2 years, you probably don't need a colonoscopy. But I walked into my doctor's office, and because insurance pays for this, he was selling as hard as he could to give me a test that I know I don't need. And that happens a lot.
So he's selling something. His income is enhanced by doing it. And you, the average patient, is saying, well, it doesn't cost me anything anyway because it's insured.
Right.
But that contributes to the overall cost of the system.
It does, because every once in a while somebody has a colonoscopy and the doctor nicks the spleen or something happens. You know, every time you do something, there's a risk as well as a benefit.
So what you're saying is it's not a coverage problem, it's a service problem.
It's a service problem. It's the way the services are administered. You can't know enough about an individual patient in a five-minute visit to know what to give them. So instead, you rely on what, let's just say, the Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services says is a good treatment. And it might be for most people, but it's not for everybody. And we could probably save a lot of money if we didn't give people things that they don't need. I mean, I don't even think that I have to go into what it costs Medicare in the last 6 months of every person's life, because that should be common knowledge by now. But most of our healthcare dollar is spent for people who are dying anyway. Mm-hmm. And it's spent on things that the people often don't want themselves. And this is another issue. I mean, if you want to talk about what costs money in healthcare, stuff like that costs a heck of a lot more money than we need to be spending.
The factoid that I remember reading is, and this is approximate, but about half of our overall healthcare costs are spent not in the last 6 months, but in the last year of life.
Okay, so that's what I'm saying, you know. And
what do we do with that then? Do we tell grandma, well, you're just going to have to suffer it out? I mean realistic here.
I am grandma. The older I get, the less anxious I am to want to go to a healthcare provider's office and hear some bad news. As long as I am feeling well, I want to go live my life right now, right here, the way I live it. Now, if there were something wrong, I would want otherwise, maybe. But to pull people in who are otherwise healthy but on Medicare for an endless round of you need to get a mammogram, you need to get a colonoscopy, you need to get a pap smear, you need to get, that's just a waste of my time. I'm still working. I feel fine.
When I say I mean
many people my age who have taken good care of themselves throughout their lives.
How do we thread the needle on that? Because you're in a very, very dicey area where this can easily be demagogued. We're gonna throw grandma off.
Yeah,
euthanasia.
Yeah.
Euthanasia. The way you do that is longer doctor visits and more continuity of care. We have almost no continuity of care now. One doctor doesn't know what the other doctor is doing. This is how prescription drug addicts get OxyContin from six different doctors. It's how elderly, infirm people are overdosed on prescription drugs that they don't even know what they're taking them for. I mean, the name for it under Obamacare is medical home. There isn't a medical home now for anyone. And if you're not on Medicare, if you're younger and you change jobs and you change insurance providers, there can be no continuity of care because you are the responsible person for getting your own health records. And if for some reason you don't get them, then you don't have them. And you have no idea if you've had any of these things, because you don't really remember.
Yeah, and I wanted to find that, though. Medical home, just for clarification, medical home is a centralized hub of information, so to speak.
Totally.
That all doctors communicate into.
Well, no, it actually is defined as, I like that definition. I actually think that's a great definition.
I can dumb things down with the best of them.
No. That's actually a better definition than what the Obama administration calls it, which a medical home is a primary care doctor. So they define a medical home as the primary care doctor who is responsible for coordinating all these other doctors that deal with you. But you're right that shouldn't be a person, because if I'm, again, on an insurance plan and, you know, my doctor quits or my insurance plan changes or my job changes or whatever, then I lose my doctor. And I shouldn't have to lose my medical home. If my medical home were truly a hub of information, I wouldn't, because I could always access that information. Okay, the problem now is we don't have access to our own medical records. If I wanted to know, for instance, when I had my last colonoscopy, I would have to fill out a bunch of forms to find out, and then I'd have to know who did it, or where it happened, or whatever. Right. Well, 10 years is a long time.
My doctor asked me when I had my last colonoscopy, and I had to tell him, I don't know.
Okay. Bingo. Okay. We all say that because we don't know. It's 10 years.
We got to take a quick break, and I promise next round we're not going to be talking about colonoscopies. I hope we're not. Let's move away from colonoscopies right here on the Think Tank. News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
You're listening to the Think Tank on the Voice of Arizona. News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
We are back with Dr. Francine Hardaway. Let's start at the beginning, shall we? In the break, we mentioned the onset of medical mistakes, prenatal care.
Right, prenatal care. Now we are giving people prenatal care if they are poor, but we are making everything into a disease so that, and that basically goes throughout life. We have made most life situations into a disease. Giving birth is a disease.
Aging
is a disease. Restless legs in the night are a disease.
Right.
You know, everything has become a disease. Some of these things are just parts of life. Mm-hmm. And we overtreat because we can, because we have pharmaceutical companies in whose interest it is to develop drugs for things, pharmaceuticals for things, and so they do it. So there is now a pharmaceutical for overactive bladder, and there is a pharmaceutical for restless leg disease. And when my grandchild was born, they told his parents that he needed a special helmet because his head was not round.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
so they put a $5,000 helmet on him to make his head round. And I just wonder what happened to kids' heads before those helmets.
I'm an example of that, by the way. Yes, my head shape. I wish I had a helmet that would have rounded this sucker out. I mean, I could wear hats.
Aha. Well, then maybe it
but
is.
But I survived, though.
Maybe it is medically necessary. But we make a lot of things into diseases that are ordinary parts of life.
Because somebody down the road has figured out how they can make a lot of money out of it.
That's correct. Because somebody down the road has figured out how to get paid for it. And if you ever I did healthcare marketing for years and years. If you've ever done healthcare marketing, the holy grail of healthcare marketing is get insurance to reimburse for it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so everything that you do in healthcare has as its goal more than help the patient save the life. It has get the insurance company to reimburse for it so we can sell it.
And when you mentioned stuff like helmets, there's a phrase that sticks in my head. It's called durable medical equipment. And that,
bingo,
I believe, is the thing that's covered 100%.
And it is the biggest scam in healthcare.
Because scooters come to mind, too.
Scooters come to mind. That's right. So there's X amount of research. You're in research. I'm not. But there's a tremendous amount of research that says if you walk and remain active through your life, you will remain healthy for a longer period of time. So the first thing they do when somebody says, oh, my back hurts, is give them a scooter. And then they stop walking. Well, that leads to a cascade of other things.
Yeah.
That we don't pay any attention.
But I'm thinking of the process. The patient is getting some big thing, so they're happy. They're usually paying zero because it's durable medical equipment.
Exactly.
Somebody's making a lot of money on that, and the prices of these, the retail prices that these things get charged, whenever you see some of those, it blows your mind.
Well, that's the issue. The prices of some of these things are high simply because the reimbursement covers it. Oh, and by the way, when you bill a government-sponsored healthcare plan or even a private insurance company and you are a doctor, because I'm the widow of a doctor, you bill at your highest rate knowing that they're going to knock you down a little. And so everybody bills these exorbitant rates so that they can get, a half of their exorbitant rate or whatever. And it's like a game. It's a total game. The pricing is not transparent. The person who is getting the scooter, as you say, doesn't know.
But if you pay cash, you're paying that full exorbitant rate.
Yes.
Right. That's the bizarre about it. It is the only business in the entire world where you come in with cash in your pocket, you're going to pay cash right now, and you end up paying full freight.
And that is why the poor, the working poor, not the people on access, but the people right above that, the working poor, pay more for health care when they pay cash out of pocket or they put it on a credit card.
They make a little money. They got a job at McDonald's or something. They don't qualify for government paid health care. They can't afford their own insurance. They end up paying full freight.
Let me push back a little bit on that, because I went 6 years without health insurance. I paid cash rates, and we did the research. I think that it's not advertised. We're not taught that you can, that there is a system of let's negotiate, let's see
we
who
are
has
not,
different prices.
We are not taught to negotiate for health care.
Correct.
And in fact, we're taught that it's embarrassing to negotiate for health care. And we are taught that the more expensive it is, probably the better it is.
Correct. Correct. So in what I found when I didn't have insurance, we had certain doctors. We still have the list of doctors in certain cash rates. I had a hernia surgery for, I think it was an insanely low price. I forget, it was like $800.
And that why you can have your teeth done in Mexico right across the border by a doctor that was trained in a United States medical school who purposely keeps an office in Mexico right over the border so that he can charge lower rates.
Right.
To the same people that he charges 4X in the United States.
Exactly.
Yeah. And another factoid here, 40% of all the bankruptcies in this country are due to medical issues.
I wouldn't doubt that. That sounds right on.
You know, you're living on the edge. You're making your expenses. You're living responsibly. You get hit with a big time medical issue, and you're trying to pay full freight, and you can't do it.
Give you a great example of that. I have an adult former foster son who works in Home Depot. And, you know, he's cruising along, and then he's walking through a park one night, and he gets hit over the head with a baseball bat by some gang of people who mugged him. So he goes to the emergency room. They are still billing him for the treatment. He had no insurance at the time. They were billing him for the care. This shows on his credit, so he can't get a car. He can't get car insurance for any reasonable rate. He can't get a decent job because they check your credit for a job. And he didn't really do anything. He got hit over the head by some kids with a baseball bat.
And then all that lines up after that.
The cascade of things that line up after that. And the problem is Obamacare does not fix that.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
It doesn't.
So let's, you know what I want to do after a break? What I want to do is I want to talk about what will fix that. Let's get into that. What are the steps? If you say Obamacare doesn't fix it, then how can we fix it if we can really fix it at all? More with Dr. Francine Hardaway when we come back on the Think Tank. News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
You're listening to the Think Tank on the Voice of Arizona. News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
We are back talking healthcare with Dr. Francine Hardaway. We've talked about the problems. How do you fix it?
Well, Obamacare wasn't the fix. Let's start that way. Obamacare still has a lot of problems, mainly due to the financial illiteracy of the people who got insurance for the first time.
Let me just jump in and give my interpretation of what Obamacare did and didn't do. We had a system that had all the flaws in it that you've described. Obamacare didn't fix that. All it did was we also had 40 million uninsured, and it brought a whole lot more people into the tent. But it didn't fix
temporarily.
But it didn't fix the underlying issue.
It was essentially health insurance reform, not health care reform.
That's right.
Is what it was.
That's right. Okay. So it wasn't really a fix. It brought a bunch of people into the system who had basically deferred maintenance, and then it sold these people who were largely the poor. It sold them plans that although they might be able to afford the premiums, they can't afford the deductibles.
Well, and that's, true. I think, we brought in people who never had health insurance before, and they're shopping for plans, and they don't understand, I think, the difference between a deductible, a stop loss, a copay, because they've never had any of this
before. Yeah, they don't know the definitions of those.
And they've got a choice of 10 plans, so they take the cheap one.
Well, that's right. They take the one with the cheap premium, and they don't realize that it doesn't cover what they needed to cover. And the problem is that when these plans were sold to people, they were not sold with any education. So people have absolutely no idea what they bought. I mean, it's like the old days when you bought a used car before Carfax and all the online information, and you didn't know what was happening in the engine of that car. That's how these people are with their health care plans. So the plans,
because of who these folks were. These are folks who never had insurance before and didn't have a clue what the components of what they're buying was.
Exactly. And sometimes their doctor wasn't on the plan and they didn't know it. And sometimes the plan has a $5,000 deductible and they didn't know it. They did everything they could to bring down the monthly premium, which is how people end up with high interest.
And you have low premiums by having a $5,000 deductible and only paying 70% instead of 90% and stuff that if you get hit with something big, is going to be
prohibitive. It's going to break you. Yeah. So Obamacare isn't the fix. So, you know, you told me that I shouldn't go into what really is the fix.
What?
That was
hear
first
it.
Segment.
Please
we're
do.
Here,
okay.
We're here
Please
now.
Do. Yeah.
Okay, so now I can say that the fix is really a form of socialized medicine. I do a lot
Scary
of...
Scary words. What's that mean?
I do a lot of... it means a single payer pays for all the health care. And that payer can either be the government, as it is with the UK, the National Health Service, or it or Canada, the Canadian Health Service, mm-hmm. or it can be a private payer like it is in the Netherlands, where actually the single payer is a privately held system.
Okay. Now, but
why is that going to make it better?
Well, hold on a second, Doc. The first thing that springs to mind to a lot of our listeners right away is the VA. A single payer system is the VA, and you talked about Canada. We talk about wait times. So that's the two things we think about: wait times and VA.
We are going to have to deal with wait times.
Okay.
Wait times are not necessarily death panels. I get a lot of chance to look at the British system. I don't love the British system. There are things wrong with it. But when you take a child into the British system, first of all, the child gets priority. So if there are a whole bunch of people waiting in an emergency room, the child basically goes first. And the reason for that is a focus on the future. And the other thing that happens is children get a different level of treatment with a lot less waiting at every level of the healthcare system. And that's kind of what I think it should be, because what it's doing is setting the stage for a healthier adult if you actually take care of the children when they're young and they're not cases of deferred maintenance when they become adults with jobs. The other thing is that because you have a primary care provider and you have a pediatrician, you don't have the high use of the emergency room facilities, which are so expensive, that we have in the U.S., where people don't really have pediatricians and primary care doctors. And yes, there is waiting. There is waiting for hip replacements. You know, a hip replacement is painful. The hip pain that leads you to need the replacement is sure. painful, but it won't kill you. And so there are going to have to be some priorities. There isn't enough money in the world to give everybody everything simultaneously.
But I can get elected if I tell everyone I'm going to give them that.
Oh, you totally can, but you're never going to be able to do it. It's for one. We have rationing now of healthcare. It's just not conscious. We don't know it. We still have a two-tiered system.
If it costs too much right now, that's rationing.
Of course. That's exactly right. We are rationing health care because if it's not covered by the plan I just bought, I still can't have it. And if my rich friend wants to have, I don't know, hormone shots to make himself younger, he can have that because he can go in and pay cash on the barrelhead. So if you look at the gap between, and I don't know what the numbers are on this either, but I bet you can find them, Mike. The gap between the life expectancy of wealthy people and the life expectancy of people that aren't as wealthy, you will find that the wealthy people, on balance, live longer. And that's because they have access to all the health care that they can possibly buy. But we can't do that for everybody.
Yeah, I know. I have a doctor that I see for asthma, and that's one of the things he says. If you don't have insurance, people do die waiting for care.
Right.
Because if you have an asthmatic attack, you can die on the spot.
But if you have asthma in the UK, you don't wait for care, especially if you are younger. So that's the kind of thing that you don't wait for.
Tie this, if you would, to single payer. Why does single payer make this work better?
Well, for one thing, single payer coordinates all the records. For another, single payer cuts out all the paperwork. For still another, single payer makes all the rates and prices more transparent because one insurance company can't play off another insurance.
Everybody gets the same deal. You don't have doctors saying, I'll take this plan, but not this plan.
Exactly.
Because there's only one plan.
Exactly. So single payer lowers the entire cost of the system.
But if it's government, we mentioned earlier.
I'm not saying it has to be government.
But if it were government, we mentioned earlier that the doctors will raise the rates. Doctors will charge full boat, the top rack rate that they can get, so they could they meet somewhere in the middle. But wouldn't that drive prices up?
Maybe not, because the government the government does dictate to Medicare and Medicaid providers how much they're going to get paid.
And doctors scream about what they're being paid on
They
that.
Do, but they don't really drop out of Medicare the way everyone
they
always...
They can't because that's half their business.
That's part of it.
That's and market. That's they have the market power.
That's right. That's part of it. And the other part of it is Medicare and Medicaid pay within 30 days. That's the law. They have to. So if you're a medical practice and you're managing cash flow, you can manage your practice on the back of Medicare and Medicaid because you know that check is going.
Oh, and you hear some of the stories from physicians on some of the other plans, 120, 150
exactly.
days, maybe
exactly.
never, you know, getting paid. It's not only how much you
fee
get paid.
Fee-for-service medicine is, it's just not a good idea. I mean, it just never was a good idea.
Well,
a lot of people are going to take issue with that, I'm sure. But even doctors know that it's not a good idea, which is why so many of them are becoming employees.
Only those with the top tier care system right now are saying there's nothing wrong with our healthcare system.
Exactly.
Everyone else, it will agree, I think, that something needs to happen, and it wasn't Obama.
In reality, I think most of we describe it as healthcare reform, but it's really about insurance. It's not, none of this is really dictating or controlling what healthcare is. It's controlling the mechanism for how you pay for it and what you pay for.
Right. We want to thank Dr. Francine Hardaway. Thank you so much for being here. You've done a great job, and you fixed healthcare. Look at that. you've done
sure.
a great job. See, we have it all fixed right here on the Think Tank. Doc and I are going to get together. We're going to tie a big fat bow around this. We're going to make sense of this thing right here in the Think Tank. News Talk 92.3 KTA.
You're listening to the Think Tank on the Voice of Arizona. News Talk 92.3 KTAR.
And a big thanks to Dr. Francine Hardaway for stopping by. I like her.
Oh,
she knows her business.
I've known her for 30 years.
Have you?
She is the guru of many things.
And she still agreed to come in? She's known you for 30 years and still agreed to come
in.
Wow, that's fascinating right there. Let me tell you that. Yeah, she has it nailed on healthcare. I got to tell you, I was expecting a little something else. When I heard her say socialized medicine, of course, me, you know, the hair on the back of my neck stood up and I thought, oh, here we go with this hippy-dippy nonsense. And you know what? She said a type of socialized medicine, and I think there's no other term for it. So if you say a type for socialized medicine, everyone still puts up their walls, that's not what she's saying.
She loves to provoke.
Yeah,
but I think
sure.
the essence of it was if you have one payer, then they have market power and they can dictate terms to providers. The other thing that you can do with that, and I think this was a theme in what she said, is this is the essence of our healthcare system. Fee-for-service means doctors and hospitals get paid for doing stuff, whether you need it or not.
Mm-hmm.
The more stuff they do, the more you get paid. And unfortunately, most of us aren't really educated consumers. And if doctor says you need a lot of stuff, you say, I think I'm getting a lot of care. As opposed to thinking everything you do has risk. Every drug you take has a downside. In addition, not even apart from the cost, it has a downside of potential side effects. And oftentimes, less is better. And if a healthcare provider, instead of being incentivized to do stuff, they're incentivized to keep you healthy, you need less stuff, but you live longer and you're healthier, that's a good system. But the whole structure of the current system just tells everybody, do more stuff and build this. Well, insurance covers it. Well, if insurance covers it, that means long run we're paying for that. We're paying for that either with taxes or we're paying for that with premiums.
Here's where I find the flaw, is that you say more stuff. We all agree to more stuff.
We
all agree
it.
To
we
more stuff.
It.
Well, we agree to it because it's free.
Right.
Someone else is paying
it's
for
not
it.
Really. We're ultimately, we're paying for it.
But
not today. But down the road, we are increasing
in
the
our
cost.
Mind's eye. In our mind's eye, if I have an owie, I got a boo-boo, and doctor says, you need this, 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 and this, I say, yep, it's free. Give me this, 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 and this. So,
And it is, the problem is that it's often free today, but it triggers.
No one thinks that. Name one American who thinks like that. They don't. They
next
don't think
year's
like that.
Premium.
Yeah, who cares about that noise, right? So, but I want to challenge you on this. So then if we have a single-payer system, we have socialized medicine, guess what? still free. I want this, 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 and this. That doesn't take care of the problem. This is where Obamacare completely missed the mark.
Obamacare is still fee for service. It didn't change anything.
It's health insurance reform.
It brought more people into the pool. Get some people some treatment before they end up in the emergency room at high cost, but it did nothing to change the fundamental structure of the system. And we didn't get in there with Francine, but I think I know where she's coming from. I've had enough discussions with her on this. The reason that didn't happen is that the hospitals, the doctors, and all the entities that are making money, the moment you try to change the structure of the system, they're gonna scream. They're gonna notice that their economics are being hurt. And they're going to scream, you know, you're trying to kill grandma.
The reason why the major insurance companies backed Obamacare was because they're being handed millions of new customers, more customers.
And that was done because they learned the lesson in 1992 when they tried to gore the oxes of some of those entities. And they sabotaged healthcare insurance reform then. So what Obama's folks knew is, we got to do something to bring people in, but we have to not take away anybody's profit centers in the course of doing it, or else they will kill us.
This will require a fundamental change of the way we live.
If we want to change the cost curve, we have to change the system, not just bring more people into a fundamentally broken system.
But here's my example there. Remember when the big selling point for Obamacare was these people at the emergency rooms, we got to get them out of the emergency rooms. Now, hold on a second. We have seen emergency room visits increase since the passing of Obamacare. Here's why. The main reason why is that that's their primary doctor. That's what they know. That's what they've always known. Get sick, go to the. Yeah. But now I have insurance. Now I'm going to go. Now I'm going to go to the emergency room. Single payer system. Nothing changes. It has to be a complete top-down, bottom fundamental change.
And you notice that was a theme of what Francine said. It's the core to this is the primary care provider. Getting people an internist, a primary doctor who's responsible for the holistic totality of your health.
But then they retire, you got to go somewhere else. And that was her problem with it. Well, I think she liked my idea. I bring some ideas to the thing.
And no doctors want to go into primary care, by the way, because they get paid.
Understood, but I'm talking about a centralized hub of information.
Which is your primary care provider.
And everyone thinks that the government's going to run that and they're going to know everything. They already know everything. I'm sorry. If you're afraid of the government knowing everything about you, guess what? They already know everything about you. I introduced the NSA.
They know, but they don't care.
Okay, but do you see what I'm saying? So with that kind of information, that takes that problem away. Mm-hmm. Right? That your primary doctor is now no longer, he's now retired in the Bahamas. Okay? So we take something like that, but how in the world, how do you get elected on any of this?
That's the hard part. I wish we should return to this subject, because the moment you start messing with any of this, there is always a scare story that somebody can invent. And it's some variant of kill grandma.
Right.
You know, because... And
but then on the other side of that, it's Susan in Detroit. She didn't have health care. Now she does.
There's always an anecdote. Right. And the kill grandma is very visceral. What the phoniness of that argument is, we have rationing right now. It's just irrational rationing by price and who has what coverage. And it's not like we're comparing this to a system whereby everybody gets everything. We get way too many people getting too much stuff they don't need. You get a bunch of people not getting stuff that they do need and getting it too late in the system so that it becomes expensive.
I went in for an ear infection. It's a true story. I went in for an ear infection twice, by the way, each time. Each time they said, all right, we'll get you some antibiotics for that, and I wrote you a prescription for some Vicodin. That looks really painful. So, whoa, hold the phone. Oh, don't worry. I took the prescription. But wait a second. I didn't say it hurt. I just said, you know, let's get this thing. I didn't ask for medication. There, once again, here, we're going to just give you stuff that you don't really need. You just need to get the problem fixed.
And you know, the problem with many of us, we go to the doctor writes a prescription. We usually feel like he's doing something. We don't want to hear, go home, you know, get good bed rest, drink fluids, and it'll resolve itself, because we don't feel like they've quote unquote done anything. And we have one other thing going on. and that is the marketing of various drugs and pharmaceuticals.
Oh my gosh.
We have got commercials telling us, ask your doctor about the XYZ medication, and you can just see the scenario. You go into the doctor and you say, well, I heard good stuff about this XYZ medication. Usually the doctor, even if they don't think much of it, it's benign. It'll make you happy. It's probably not going to hurt you. I'll write a script.
Sure.
And you will feel, you as a customer will feel like you got something done.
Those commercials are awesome. You know, do you wake up in the morning?
Yeah, I mean, they are creating needs very often where needs don't exist because the dollars involved are big.
One thing I want to get, it was interesting to me. I think one of the first steps to this whole problem is get rid of employer insurance programs. Well, I think once we actually have full control.
Do you know how we got into that in this country?
Well, it's mandated now.
You know how we got into it in the first place? In World War II price controls.
Oh, geez.
You were not allowed to. Prices were fixed. You couldn't give raises to employees. And companies wanted to attract talent. They weren't allowed to give raises, so they started to give benefits. By the end of, and by the way, at the time they did it, healthcare was way cheaper than it is now. And so it was a benefit that companies could offer, didn't cost them a heck of a lot, and it was a way to differentiate themselves from their competitors. Well, it became part of the culture thereafter. And what it had was a whole lot of dysfunctions. For example, now you say you have some health condition, your employer covers you. You're not free to quit and start a business if that's what you want to do, because the first thing that comes to your mind is, oh, my God,
I
would lose my health care.
Right.
It is one thing that Obamacare did do to fix that. You can no longer lose that health. I mean, you're still going to – you'll have to pay for it yourself. But
now they mandated that the employers do it. I think they made the problem worse.
Well,
I think like taxes, if we have the employers stop taking it out, we're going to start getting up in arms about taxes a little more. Second, if the employer stops paying for our insurance, we're going to demand some health care reform. Yeah? No? Come with me on that, Doc.
Not enough time. Mike,
all right.
KTR.com if you want to listen to archives of recent shows. MikeO'Neill.org if you want to listen to the old ones. They're up there forever.
All right. Thanks, Doc. And a big thanks to Dr. Hardaway. Here's the Think Tank. News Talk 92.3 KTR.